when I was given the information on this, I was appalled. I was speechless, believe it or not. I was speechless for a while at the magnitude of the technology and the will of ill intention that has been orchestrated on this planet. The magnitude of the technology itself makes everything, all the technology things that we have on the planet right now, look like kindergarten child's play. These are technologies that have the ability to reverse the orbital patterns of planets around their suns, which is what was done to Nibiru. The technologies that were done here, if they aren't healed during this Stargate opening cycle, there's going to be a major problem. They will cause pole shift because of the distortions in the planetary grids. We're going to learn about some agreements that were made between certain fallen angelic races who thought they were going to lose the game in this time, you know, this time period. So they decided that they would join what's called the Emerald Covenant. The Emerald Covenant is the founder's original co-creation treaty for this time matrix that was built upon loving co-creation and co-evolution. There were agreements made in 1992 called the Palladian-Syrian Agreements that were made between certain groups of fallen angelic Anunnaki races where they agreed to assist the founders races in the Christos realignment mission. Because of these agreements, for a while, the New Age movement was gaining solidarity and the people were all working the same agenda. The channels were working the same agenda as other people. The Palladian-Syrian Agreements were broken recently. There are a series of events that took place that began in September of 2000, in fact, September 12th, 2000. The anniversary of that was the Trade Center fiasco. At that point, there was something called the United Intruder Resistance that was formed. And this is a problem. It's a problem because right now, there are factions of people in human bodies that are called the Illuminati collectively. There were a bunch of different competing factions of Illuminati, each holding the agenda of one of the fallen angelic races. And they were all competing with each other. Because the guardian races and the founders have done so well so far in this Stargate opening cycle to get the grids clear, all the fallen angelic groups that don't like each other decided that they were going to join forces in order to stop the Christos realignment mission. We are in the middle of that. When the fallen angelics agree to do something, that means they're going to motivate their Illuminati humans to fulfill certain agendas. The humans themselves won't even know the bigger picture. They'll just know the little part they're being impulsed to do. We're in the middle of what could be a mess, and it's a mess that could end up in World War III between 2003 and 2006. The guardian races, the founders races, the indigo children that are awakening on the planet, and the humans that are awakening on the planet, have a chance to heal this before it gets any worse. There was something called a crisis intervention mission was begun after September 2000 when the United Resistance issued an edict of war against the founders races. The last time an edict of war was issued from the fallen angelic collectives to the founders races was in the first seeding of the human race on this planet. I believe that was 25 million years ago. It ended in something called the Electric Wars. The Electric Wars were a period in history where everything on the planet was literally vaporized. The life forms here, nobody won that round. Seeding 2 had to take place after the grids were rebalanced, and that's why humans came back again. Then there was something called the Thousand Years War. That wasn't even, that was a small war compared to the Electric Wars when they actually, the fallen angelics actually took on the founders, which is really dumb. You know, it's like a dumb thing to do because the founders races have access to primal current. They're running source current. You're not going to overpower source, you know. There was another period after the second seeding had got started and was doing well. It was called the Thousand Years War. Again, the same beings showing up. We have basically several groups. We have Anunnaki fallen angelics, and we have various groups of those competing with each other. And we have draconian and reptilian fallen angelics competing with the Anunnaki and with each other, all of them trying to take control of this time matrix. Now, we're in the third seeding of the human race on this planet. This is the third seeding because twice it's literally been wiped out completely. I mean, if there were five left standing, And either of those times, a new seating wouldn't have been needed, as long as there was a male-female mix. But literally, everything was obliterated. That's kind of amazing to think that something like that could happen. We're so sheltered in our little thought field in this time frame. And we're taught a history that is so tiny. Our history has been so edited. Our memory banks have been messed with on a planetary level, not just on a personal level. It's hard for us to remember or even think about what it could mean to have a drama that big unfold. But what's interesting is the people that are on planet right now, if they could get their memory back, they would know it was possible because they lived through or died through the other ones. We all have a part of ourselves that are connected to those time frames when the cataclysms happened. That is part of what's called the race karma imprint, and it's coming back through now. It's reactivating. Our Atlantean karma is coming back. It's reactivating the planetary grids, and in the race morphogenetic field, or the race thought field, we are going to live the same mess if we don't be aware of what it is and do things to change it. That's what this work is about. And it's not sad work. When you begin to see the magnitude of the drama, it's mind-blowing. At least it was for me. I mean, I was prepared to come in and say, okay, you know, yeah, we're gonna teach, you know, basic Christos teachings. That's great. I didn't commission for wartime. I didn't. You know, I mean, war, fallen angelics do that. You know, my own history, my own remembered history, taught me that, but I didn't know what it meant. In this lifetime, you might wonder, I don't talk about myself very much because I don't particularly like to, but once in a while, it helps people to understand the sincerity that I speak with, and also to understand the amount of education that I have to speak about what I speak about. In this lifetime, I came in as what's called an indigo child. I birthed in as an indigo child. As an indigo child, I had, and all indigo children have this, DNA strand template 6. Was activated, not just the first three. But most indigo children don't know that when they birth in. Usually they have to go through activation of strands 4 and 5 before strand 6 kicks in and they start to get their soul memory banks back. Because I had a little problem with what's called fetal integration, and when I realized what I was getting into, I tried to spiral back out so I didn't incarnate. I had to be thrown into my heart chakra. So that's literally how I integrated into the baby body's heart chakra, is where my soul integrated, instead of through the crown chakra. What that did was loosen the seal, or open the seal on the heart chakra, which activated strand 4, DNA strand 4, which we'll talk about, the DNA strand templates. What that did was allow prematurely the memory banks, the reincarnational memory banks, to be opened. So from the time that I came into the baby body, before it left my mother's womb, I remembered. I remember my entire fetal integration process. I remember who I was before I got into the body, and I remember trying to run like heck when I found out what I'd actually got myself into down here. And by the time I was born, I had pictures running, movies, like videos in my head of different lifetimes. And they just go on and on and on. When I was very small, I didn't know what the heck it meant. I figured everybody did that. You know, everybody had those pictures. I knew that my mother was the person that who had burned me on a cross in the light last time we met each other. I remembered that very clearly. And I was amazed because she didn't remember. And then I was kind of relieved after I got older. I was relieved that she didn't remember. I used to have vivid memories of drowning, which is how I left, you know, one particular lifetime. I had movies running in my head before I could talk. By the time I was about, I think 18 months, my mother said I started to talk. I was an early talker. Surprise. She said I used to terrify her because she'd, you know, put the baby down for the night. And she'd go in and look at me to check on me, and I'd be laying there asleep with my eyes wide open, talking. And then I'd become aware of her without even shifting focus and say, angels are talking to me, leave me alone. They're coming to take me home, right? So I tell her this stuff, you know? And I vaguely remember that, except most of my consciousness was focused there, talking to other things that nobody else could see. So by the time I could speak, the inner perceptions had developed, where I not only had movies running, I was starting to understand what they were. I knew they were other lifetimes, and I was not raised in a framework where reincarnation was part of our religious training or anything. My mother was a Protestant, and my father was a Catholic. His brother was a priest. We were not taught reincarnation in our family. But I remembered, and I knew that that was natural. But I was still under, you know, at age 4 through 6, I was still under the illusion that everybody else did too, remembered too. And I had a lot of problems with remembering people, like when I would be in preschool or whatever, you know, like go up and hug somebody because you remembered them from another life, and they kind of look at you and go, ugh, you know, what are you doing? So there's a whole process. You know? It's tough for kids that have memory. And some of the indigo babies that are coming in now are going to have this. Or some of it would come through with just, you'd meet somebody, total stranger, didn't matter what age, what race, what context. If you knew them and were close to them in another lifetime, you just have this heart chakra thing happen, and you just love them. I want to go home with you, not my mommy. You know, that kind of thing. So I went through these periods of this. And at the age of 4, I started to, well, later I recognized that what happened at the age of 4 was certain groups became aware of who I was before I did. Certain fallen angelic groups are very aware that I had come in. They're aware of every indigo that comes in, but I didn't know that then. I didn't know I was an indigo then. I just knew that I remembered all these things, and I know I was all these people, and I was trying to balance the perceptions. But I started to get tracked, first with what are called the Zeta races, the little gray things that people in the UFO movement are seeing, and literally lived in terror because they were starting the abduction scenario with me. And then it got stopped. And that's when the ones I remember talking to when I was 2 years old and my mother, you know, come in and look at me and say, I'm talking to the angels, they intervened. They weren't angels. Well, any more than humans are, because humans are angels. I was fortunate that a group that came to be known as the Guardian Alliance, to put it easy, had intercepted what was an attempt to wipe out me and my body before it got old enough to activate the DNA where I would fully understand what those memory imprints were about and understand the mission that I came to be a part of. Because I came through with a contract that's called a speaker's contract, an Emerald Covenant speaker's contract. That Emerald Covenant speaker's contract wasn't something I had memory of when I was a child. I just knew I was here and it was important and it was a mission and I didn't want to be here because it wasn't as nice as I hoped it would be. I was fortunate that the Guardian Alliance groups, which are a part of the founders, Christos Founders Race collectives, had intervened and protected me, because I wouldn't be here speaking to you now. I wouldn't even be alive in body, because what they wanted, the fallen angelic groups that were behind the Zeta races, what they wanted to do is destroy me. Before I woke up enough and before I started speaking, and that was before I even knew I was a speaker, it's like having the cards stacked against you and you don't even know they're stacked against you. By the time I was 7, I entered training with the Guardian Alliance groups. Training with the Guardian Alliance was very interesting. It was nothing like being contacted by Zetas. There was no fear involved. But I was offered opportunity to go into a state of what's called Merkaba, which we talked about in Kathara Healing Level 1, but we'll also talk about here. It is a certain thing that can, then when your DNA template activates in the appropriate way, you can literally transmute the cellular structure of your body and shift its angular rotation of particle spin and pop up in another space time frame. I know these things are real because, for two reasons. One, because I remember fully ascension in a biblical period lifetime where I was a woman named Miriam, who was the half-sister of a person named Jeshua. Why I really remember it's true, it's not just a vague memory, is because I was taken into Merkaba and I underwent those physical changes to be taken into training with a group called the Iani. Iani means of the Ionis. They are a group of angelic human indigo children that are a very ancient race that have evolved in inner earth. They began to take me and train me in various things, everything from the history, the forgotten and forbidden history, to spiritual mechanics in the Melchizedek cloister tradition, to Kelantic science, which is the basis of all of the technologies that we are bringing through now. I went through training until I was about 18, and at the age of 18, I had a near-death experience, which brought it all really home for me. I found out one thing in the near-death experience, that, yep, it's all real, and yep, I'm still alive, and my body's down there, and I can feel its frequency dropping. I was given a choice as to whether I would leave or whether I would go back and finish what I'd originally commissioned to do. I probably would have stayed gone if I hadn't had an infant daughter by that time. And they told me one thing, The guardians told me one thing. They said, we won't pressure you or make the decision for you, but the problems that you had, meaning the open perceptions, interdimensional perceptions, the reincarnational memory, those things, the speaker's contract, she would have that too. And without me, she wouldn't be able to understand what it meant, and it would terrify her. And an image of my infant daughter came. Yeah, I still have the image, like a Kodak snapshot in her little pink polka dotted outfit. I couldn't stay, even though it's nicer. After you cross over, you're into more expanded fields, it feels better. I came back and still was trying to understand what all of this stuff meant. God, I'm being taken to places, my body's disappearing and reappearing in other places that most people don't even consider real. I kept being taken to a place called the Interdimensional Association of Free World Center for Interdimensional Communication Development. Now, this is a place that is located in the time 6520 AD, okay, future time, but it's a physical place when your body has that angular rotation of particle spin. It is connected, it lives on the location of what we call Kauai, Hawaii today. So it's the same location, but in this time frame that is a density 2 Terran time frame, there are a very different civilization that is one of the probable civilizations that will evolve from this period of time if the fallen angelics do not get control of the planetary grids and the Amenti stargates. After the near-death experience and my choice to come back, I still didn't understand a third of what I really wanted to, you know, as far as answering the questions, because when you grow up awake and aware, it can be very, very confusing trying to make sense of it within the context of the culture and the things you're being taught here. I was offered the opportunity to receive what are called Melchizedek Cloister ordinations. Now, the ordinations, they had let me know that I came in as a level 3 ordinate, which means I had not finished the other ordinations in other lifetimes. These are different than what are called Melchizedek initiations. There's 12 levels of initiation for every ordination level. Okay, what's being practiced by the other Melchizedeks that don't use the name Cloister at the end? They are doing initiations, and you will get one ordination. We are doing levels of ordination. Now, the reason I'm able to give the transmissions for ordinations, Melchizedek Cloister ordinations, is because they were given to me. When I was 18, they began more active study, where I literally had to rearrange my life around what periods of time I could be vacant from the planet, where I could leave and make sure the kids are taken care of and that kind of stuff, because I have to go for a lesson. And when I was taken into inner earth this time, not to the place in future time, but to the inner earth civilizations where the Iani have their cultures. That's where something called the Amenti crystal temples exist. These are physical, massive crystal structures. They're absolutely beautiful. And they are what run the stargates, actually. They are the manual control grid in inner earth for the stargates of inner earth, but also the ones for the halls of Amenti stargates. I was taken there at various times, and it was explained to me that I was given a level, I had come in with level 3 ordination, which is a regent ordination. That means it's the avatar level ordination. So I was like, okay, great, what does that mean? Because I didn't have all the technology to understand it by then. I progressed from regent up through what's called an Ekar ordination, which is the 6th level and the final level of ordination. And at that point, my planetary service contract that was connected to my galactic and universal service contract was kind of put on the board before me, and I had the choice whether I'd accept that ordination or not, because it meant I was locking myself in to have to fulfill what I came to do on the planet, because if I didn't, there would be a whole team of indigo children that if I didn't bring the information through that they were waiting for would not be able to wake up in time. So I took the responsibility, and it was done out of love. This is why it irks me to death when some of the, you know, people that are channeling and stuff, their channels tell them, where's the love? It's like, try my life on for size. You know, try the last 30 years of my life, and then you'll be able to answer your own question. Because there's one thing that motivated me the whole time, was I progressively understood the value of the teachings that were being given to me and the freedom that it allowed me. The freedom in this society to be able to be taken through a stargate or walk through a stargate and disappear, turn into light, and pop up somewhere else. If I could give that freedom to 5 other people, I would feel so good, you know, just because, my God, we're not trapped here. That's why I came back, because I might not be able to get anybody through a Stargate. I'd be lucky if I learned enough to get myself through without the help of the Iyani. But if I could bring the teachings here like they were giving to me, people would eventually be able to do that for themselves. As things progressed and my education progressed, I learned more about what my personal life history had been and where all the movies fit. Because the movies were like simultaneously running videos. Look over here and it's doing that. Look over here, it's doing that. And this is all going on while I'm trying to do my schoolwork and things like that. You know, like, put that over here, please. Can I concentrate? A, B, C. Finally, as I approached about age 28, I started to see the sequencing, the linear time sequencing that was involved with the lifetimes, where I get the whole sequence of the life, or at least the most important ones. We all have like 1,728 different lives that are running simultaneously. To remember, I don't have all my files open because I'm only opening the ones that are most important to my mission this time. And the body can only hold so much of that memory when the planetary grids are only activated to a certain level, because it shuts down the rest of the DNA. So I learned what it meant to be who I was. And through that, what was a really, I was terrified most of my childhood and adolescence. I was scared to death of what was happening to me, yet I felt a presence with me. A presence of rightness and a presence of what I can only describe as God. I knew that even though it seemed confusing, there was a place where it made perfect sense, and I knew that I was okay, even in the most precarious situations. I was always grateful for that knowing. That's another thing, that if I could give people a gift, I would give that to them, every last one of them, because you'd never doubt again that no matter what happens outside around you, you will be okay. No matter what drama you're involved in, if you know that presence with you, which is a piece of yourself that never left connection to Source, you will, even if you don't know the mechanics yet, you can trust that part. You can surrender and say, okay, whatever, let my will be thy will, is what I used to say, meaning divine will. Whatever my will is, I give it back. You know, I just want what's right to happen here. And I went through a lot of my life that way until I started to understand more of the mechanics, and I was given the heavy master's training and those kind of things, and then asked to go speak, which was the most terrifying thing I was ever asked to do, because I was on a vow of silence where I was not allowed to speak about it until after I turned adult age, because they probably would have locked me up someplace if I had been, you know, a six-year-old talking about last time when she was in the biblical period. You know what I mean? Doesn't go over too well in modern culture. It all brought me to the point where in 1999, well, actually between the end of 1996 and the middle of 1997, I was asked to take down transmission of books. Books that were being transmitted, not in a channeling sense, but from something called holographic discs that since I was seven, I had begun receiving training to be able to access. They're called the Cloister Dorator plates. And we'll get into the history of those a little bit tonight. The Cloister Dorator plates are physical technologies, but they're transharmonic, which means they can go in this density and they can also go up to the next density level. These plates are holographic disks that have had the stored records, the founder's records, encoded. Maybe our history was lost and forbidden here, but somebody kept track of it. They were the history records of the mechanics of science and spirituality as originally taught by the founders, the original founders' teachings. They had the history, the complete history of our time matrix encoded within them, including the future history and the probabilities that will emerge from what we call the present. I was trained since I was seven to begin transmission, receiving energy from those plates. At first, I had to be physically present and holding them in my hand. But after a while, when my DNA was keyed to their frequency, I was trained to be able to pull that information through and translate it into my home language this time, which is English. So when I was asked to begin the translations on the plates, it ended up with first a book called Voyagers 1, and that was called The Sleeping Abductees. And it was geared toward the people who were having issues with UFOs and the abduction phenomena. So they would begin to understand what was happening, because there was a whole group of people that are not accepted in the New Age movement, usually. They're kind of like off on their own, trying to get help through psychiatry and realizing that's not the place to go after a while, unless you want to get locked up in a funny farm. So the book was for them. And then right after that, when that was ready to go to press, they also told me that, you know, here, this is going to be your publisher, send it to them. I said, okay. And the publisher said, yeah, we'll publish that, no problem. So no pink slips from publishers that didn't want to publish it. They told me he was going to publish it. And he had been told, too, the publisher had been told that he was going to get the book submitted. Right when book one was supposed to come out, I got a message from the IANI, and they said, stop the presses. Something has happened that's extremely important. And they kept saying, the ARC has sparked, the ARC has sparked. They're, what are you talking about? They were talking about the Ark of the Covenant. And I didn't know what that was then. I didn't have the history records on it yet. The Ark of the Covenant is a portal passage. It's a portal passage that has been, used to come down in Atlantis, but now, since the Atlantean period where the grids were damaged, it was moved to Giza, Egypt. It's right literally under the Great Pyramid. And there is a certain thing that needed to happen with the Ark of the Covenant. It had to activate because a certain frequency is hitting it for the Stargate opening cycle to actually take place this time. When they had told me the Ark had sparked, they weren't even sure. The guardian races weren't sure. The fallen angelics weren't sure. Nobody was sure if we were actually going to fulfill a stellar activation cycle this time. They didn't know because of the grid damage if the grid speed would pick up enough. It was almost preferable if it didn't because it would have postponed the final conflict drama. Except there was a problem. If the stellar activation cycle didn't take place now, it wouldn't have made it to the next cycle because of the Zetas on the planet and what they were doing with the planetary grid. Because we've been being visited here for the last 70 years. Our governments, particularly the states and a few other countries, have been working, certain factions of them, not the external governments, but a few people in very key positions have been working with the Zeta races who are running a draconian One World Order Dominion agenda. Because of what's going down with that, if the stellar activation cycle didn't consummate this time, the planet literally would have imploded before the next period, you know, possible period. So the Ark has sparked was a great thing. And it meant there was a whole bunch more information that had to be brought through. Sleeping abductees, that was like, great. Let the people having that problem deal with that, you know, that'll help them. But now, and this is where Voyager's Volume 2, The Secrets of Amenti, started. The Secrets of Amenti got into everything. It got into stuff that had to do with our history and a race called the Turanisium race, which was the original seed race for humans. And before the Turanisium, they were Orifim. So we began to learn the lost history of our race. We know we didn't come out of apes. We weren't, you know, pond scum and then happened to, you know, evolve up on land and, you know, go through that process. So the history records began to be given. But they were done in a way in Voyager's Volume 2, first edition. There was still hope that the Anunnaki fallen angelic races were going to honor the Emerald Covenant. So it was done very gently and very carefully, where we weren't exposing Anunnaki races, we weren't exposing any names here as far as, you know, who's channeling what. It was done very gently, hoping that the Anunnaki races would fulfill their, you know, their promises to the Emerald Covenant, to the founders. That book caused a storm unto itself, and there was a lot of people, even ones working with, you know, Anunnaki matrices, that were interested in the work. By the time we got the books out into the public, that's when I had to start talking about them. That's when weird stuff started to happen, where there'd be people that would just turn on me, like literally for no reason. That's when I started to get my rude awakening education, where you start to realize that people, some people are being manipulated by things they don't see and they don't want to know. And they would be used to try to intimidate me or try to, you know, get me off path. I had Freemasons try to get me to join their lodges, and so did you, before you ever met me. I had all sorts of interesting things taking place that I was trying to keep up with. What is going on? Finally, it all came out when the Palladian-Syrian agreements of 1992 were finally and completely broken. Because at that point, the Founders races and the Guardian Alliance and the IANI had to go into expose. They had to bring through the whole thing as far as what is going down here so people could start to protect themselves and not be manipulated and so we could get the good work done. Voyager's Volume 2 took 18 months to redo after they sold out of Volume 1, and it's actually Voyager's Volume 2 second edition took 18 months from the time it had sold out as, you know, regular Voyager's Volume 2 first edition. It's about double the size now, and it has all the updated information. It doesn't have everything that's in your Templar manuals. There's a bunch of things in there that are more into the mechanics and in some areas that Voyagers couldn't be any longer. I couldn't include it in there. But it brings us up to date with the stuff we're going to be brought up to date with by the end of this workshop, which goes from what are Stargates and what does all that have to do with anything, all the way up to the history, to the point where we understand what we're in the middle of, why the Trade Center thing happened, and what we need to do to begin creating a protection field in the planetary grids. And as we help the planet protect itself, we also do the same thing to our own biofields. That's where roundtables come in. We'll learn roundtables through this workshop. History, story, and religious control dogma to further the political, economic, and world dominion agendas of the Roman Empire. They took the texts, they edited them, they contrived a story by putting bunches of them together, took out the ascension mechanics completely, twisted up the lines so you couldn't tell what, you know, the Grail lines really even existed. And they did this to further the political objectives of Rome, which was to take over the world. Rome was being controlled by Illuminati, who were in contact with the Nibiruans, and another group of them were in contact with the Draconians. So literally, this has been an invasion every step of the way. So if I say, like right now, like, you know, I hate to bother people and don't want to upset you or anything, but we're kind of like in the middle of an invasion, but don't worry about it. It's been going on for like thousands of years, but this is what it's all been moving toward, this time period. Okay, let's see. Where am I? Okay. Yeah, okay. The Council of Nicaea used edited distortions of genuine 1080 Essene, Sumerian, Egyptian, Greek, Roman, Sanskrit, Tibetan, and remnant ancient Atlantean records to contrive their book, the Canonized Bible, an intentional and malicious distortion of the true Essene Christian biblical texts. That's why people get mad at me, oh, you're against the Bible? I am not. In fact, one of me, way back there in the Christ period, helped her write the darn thing. I love the Bible. But what they call the Bible today, when I first open a Bible and start to read, the first time I did, I actually threw it against the wall. There was a part of me, now I know what part, that rose up and just was so angry. That's not what it meant. Like certain things were twisted. They were supposed to set people free, but they were used to enslave them. It was like, how dare you take, you know, the holy teachings and do what you have done to them. This has been done here, and I will go head to head with any pope, and I'll say, what's more important to you, covering up your lies from the last thousands of years that's been propagated through your thing, or do you want to evolve your religion back to where it has a chance of being something pure? Because that's why I'll go out and I'll talk, not against the Bible, I'll talk for the Bible, and I'll try to motivate any Christian to try to find the truth that was in it and realize a whole bunch of that's been taken out. So don't let that book keep you from having your relationship to God the way you were intended. That's the message I carry. Yes?
You said that in 1018, that was the last commission for Caesar. Is that because the Guardians were discussing with what was done to the Bible as well?
That was part of it. It wasn't the last time they tried. It was the last time that they attempted to put the books down in physical written form. There had been other attempts since that time of at least giving like little portions of it or oral tradition. But what was done then was the commission was to get a set of the Mahārāta books back, which was a big commission. They were like, you know, literally all 12 plates were supposed to be involved, except one was still roaming around that we couldn't find, which was plate 11. But if you could access plate 12, you could pull the information that would have been on plate 11. So the last written commission was literally the three of us were commissioned, or the three people were commissioned to bring through the entire 590 volumes of the Mahārāta text. We didn't get to finish that. We only got, as you see, a very short amount of that done. You know, we got the 15 minus three books were done. They're supposed to be 590 volumes. The books didn't really even compile one volume. So there was a lot more that we weren't able to finish in that time. Okay, anyway, I'm gonna get back to this.